It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Good to be here with you. Our telephone number. You know the number, but I'll tell it to you anyway. 704-570-1110. On Twitter, at Winterbull Show, and of course at the Brett Winterbull Show Facebook page. I want to ask you a question right out of the box here. What is the value of being an American citizen? What is the value of citizenship? It's a serious question. When you think about what it means to be a citizen versus, say, a resident or a visitor or an alien or any of these designations, of what value is it to be a citizen of the United States of America? Because I happen to believe being a citizen of the United States of America is probably the greatest blessing, other than marrying my wife and having my kids. I would say it's the greatest blessing in my life, being an American, being in this country, even in this crazy time, in this crazy place with the crazy politics. It is still an unbelievable blessing, and that the odds are so stacked against you that you would be so lucky to live in the United States of America as an American citizen in the year 2021, that it's almost unfathomable. But unfortunately, it feels to me that really powerful people, some of them are politicians, some of them are entertainers, some of them are, quote, journalists, some of them are politicians. I don't think they realize the value of being an American citizen. Sincerely, I don't think they do. I think they think being an American citizen is just, well, that's just who I am and what I am, and that's beside the point. It's not important. We ought not celebrate that. We ought not embrace that. We ought not, you know, recognize that for the specialness that it is, right? And so I see this story, and I think it's a story worth being angry about. This story about the midnight flights, the 2 a.m. flights, the 4 a.m. flights going around the country to deposit illegal immigrants around the country in various locations. And I know what's going to happen. Well, what's going to happen is people are going to say, no, Brett, those are unaccompanied minors. Those are children. Those are children, and they are being moved to be reunited with their family and to be with their sponsors. And that is what we're supposed to do as a good Christian nation. We are supposed to help these people out. Are we? I mean, in this way? How? How? You know, it's pretty incredible when you think about the federal government in the era of COVID taking unaccompanied minors, in air quotes, because I don't know who's on these planes. They don't want to tell you who's on these planes. And if they gave you the names, you wouldn't be able to track it back anyways. But you look at this story and you say, okay, hold on a minute. We're taking thousands of migrants who have crossed the border illegally, putting them on airplanes and flying them to wherever they want to go. How do you plan on getting, say you had to get to St. Louis. Say you had to get to Chicago. I don't know why. Say you had to get to Louisville, or you had to get to Atlanta or Raleigh. Like, how would you get there? Well, I'd have to go book a flight. Would you pay for it? Well, duh. Plane loads of underage migrants are being flown secretly into suburban New York in an effort by President Biden's administration to quietly resettle them across the region, the New York Post has learned. The charter flights originate in Texas, where the ongoing border crisis has overwhelmed local administration and local immigration officials, and they've been underway since at least August, according to sources familiar with the matter. Last week, the Post saw two planes land at Westchester County Airport, just north of New York City, where most of the passengers who got off appeared to be children and teens, with a small portion appearing to be men in their 20s. 20s is not a child. I mean, I know mentally, you know, 25-year-olds can be regarded as children. Remember, it was the Barack Obama, Joe Biden administration that reclassified your teenage years all the way up to 26. All the way to 26, you were still a child. But who are these guys in their 20s that we're flying around? We're reuniting them with their families. Are we, or are we reuniting them with MS-13? with 18th Street, with the gangs that they are members of. Is that what we're actually doing? So what is the value of your citizenship? What is the value of being an American citizen in 2021? Really, what is that value? Like I said, it's precious, right? It's precious. I respect it. I wouldn't renounce my citizenship for anything in the world. I really wouldn't. 100%, I would not do it. I know there are people who go, you know, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to pack up. I'm going to move. I'm going to move to Cambodia. I'm going to move to Belize. I'm going to move to Hawaii. Now, I know Hawaii is part of the United States. But the thing is, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I'd feel like I was a traitor to my country. I'd feel like I was given up on it. So what's to stop us, right, from calling the Department of Homeland Security or calling these Catholic charities that are funding this up in New York State? What's to stop us from calling them and saying, hi, my name is Brett Winterbull, or your name is Nancy Flanagan, or your name is Jim Sanchez, and calling them up, calling the Department of Homeland Security up and saying, hey, I got to get to Maui. I want one of these free Biden flights. I ain't paying for it. You got to fly me to Maui. You got to fly me to Seattle. You got to fly me to Coeur d'Alene. You got to fly me to Lincoln, Nebraska. I don't feel like paying for it. Why are you paying for these flights? Why have you become the delivery route driver for the cartels? We are funding slavery because that's what this is. This is human trafficking. That's a very clean, clinical word that gets used, but it's slavery. You know the 1619 project you hear about? You know the reparations and all the stuff that you hear about with slavery that was abolished by the Republicans by winning the Civil War in 1865? And then Ulysses S. Grant comes in and you have a whole bunch of amendments put in that outlawed and says you can't do slavery anymore. You got slavery right now in North Carolina. You got slavery right now in Charlotte. They call it human trafficking. It's a more clinical phrase. It's human trafficking. Okay. It's slavery. Where's Kamala Harris? Where's Joe Biden? I thought we were all about civil rights and liberties. Why are you delivering the cartels' enslaved persons to people? Every person that comes into the United States of America and takes advantage of the system and takes advantage of the benefits of being a citizen without actually being a citizen and who comes in here in an illicit fashion, you know what that is? It's citizenship counterfeiting. Every fake $100 bill that comes off the press devalues your money by $100. Every person that comes in and takes advantage of the system without being a citizen devalues your citizenship. What value is the citizenship to you? News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Let's grab a couple calls here. Let me start with Scott. Hello, Scott. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind, sir?
Brett, how are you doing?
I'm well.
This story about the people being transferred into the U.S.
Yes.
There's a website on, or a channel on YouTube. Called Monkey Works, W-E-R-X.
Okay.
He's been tracking these flights for months and months out of Texas. He's 30 years, aerospace, military.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I see what he's doing. He's doing a bunch of stuff. He's doing, like, tracking spy planes, fighter planes. This guy's all about airplanes. I get it.
Yeah, and these flights he's tracked have even come to the Carolinas.
Yeah. Well, they are. Oh, they're going everywhere because you have to spread out the population because otherwise it's going to draw attention, and that's essentially what they're doing. I think the Biden administration said, okay, you know what? When you had all those Haitians gathered at Del Rio under the bridge, that was a really bad look, and I think they said, you know what? We have got to spread this around the country because we have got to make sure that there's no one location that the media can go look at. And it's a sin. It is a sin. Brian, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Brian?
Yeah, man. Let me ask you something, man. Would you compare human trafficking to the Holocaust? Would you do that?
I think you probably could. Yeah, it depends on how it is that's happening because you've got.
Would you do that?
I think what you've got is Well, I mean, if somebody takes somebody hostage and forces them to work against their will or sexually traffics them, then that's certainly not, that's not a free will job.
No, no. What I ask you, would you compare that to the Holocaust? Is that the same thing as a Holocaust?
Well, you know what, on one level for sure it is, because you have compulsory labor at the point of a gun, and that resulted in the deaths of millions. It's all in that same universe.
Wow, man. I think that the Holocaust, and I think that slavery mm-hmm. is on such a tremendous higher level than what you described.
Does slavery exist in the United States today? Does slavery exist in the United States today?
You're talking about absolutely not. Not the slavery that black people went through. No, absolutely. You will never see that again.
Well, thank God for that. Thank God the Republicans were able to, right, because the Republicans were able to push the abolition movement and be successful in that way. But the reality is, you have got tens of thousands, maybe millions of people in involuntary servitude in the United States and around the world today. In fact, go on the internet. Look at Exodus Road. Go look at that organization. Look at the liberation organizations operating at the United Nations level, because they understand that people are held in involuntary servitude and in slavery. They're sexually trafficked. They're forced to work jobs. This is a terrible situation.
Listen. They don't have their name stripped. They don't have the history stripped.
I'm not saying it. No.
You compare that to slavery, man. That is nothing close to that. Nothing close to that. And you know what? It hurts my feelings that...
Well, I'm sorry that it hurts your feelings. What we should do is fight. We should fight.
People on the radio.
We should fight. No, I'm not going to let you off the hook this way. Listen, we should fight to abolish this in all of its forms, whether it's Mexican drug traffickers or whether it's cartels, whether it's people who are being taken in against their will all over the world. I'm glad we've come to an agreement on this. Now join me in this fight. Join me in this fight. This is a horrible injustice, and an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. ExodusRoad.com. Does slavery exist in America today? It does. It does. Do you know that in 1850, an average slave was sold for $40,000? That's according to the stats over at Exodus Road. Worldwide, the average price for a slave today is $90. Women, men, children are being held against their will, are being killed, are being sold. This is unacceptable, and we, as the United States of America, need to lead the way and say enough. This must not continue, and our government must not fund the efforts to allow this to happen. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show. 704-570-1110 to have your say, to be a part of the conversation. Very interesting piece that moved overnight, and one that I want to share with you, because I think it's testimony to so much of what we believe in when it comes to more limited government in our lives. Ira Stoll penning this over at the New York Sun newspaper. Buttigieg disappears, so to speak, raising the question, is the DOT really necessary? Now, this is a much broader point that Ira Stoll is making in this regard, but here's some of what he writes, and I think it's exactly spot on. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg has actually been on paid leave since mid-August to spend time with his husband, Chasen, and their two newborn babies, Politico reported on October 14th. What's mildly humorous about this is that until the Politico report, nobody much noticed that Mr. Buttigieg had been missing. The Department of Transportation website has a section for speeches by Buttigieg. The most recent one listed was August 9th. Now, Washington has a well-earned reputation for shutting down for a vacation of nearly European proportions during the month of August, leaving summer interns to finish out their stays unsupervised amid the capital city's staggering humidity. Stretching that late summer break stealthily into mid-October raises the question, if the rest of the transportation department's nearly 55,000 employees were to disappear, would anybody miss them? Now, I know DOT workers are going to say, wait, hold on, Brad. What are you doing? That's a very disrespectful comment. Well, it's Ira Stoll writing this over in the New York Sun. America somehow has managed to survive from independence in 1776 all the way to the passage of the Department of Transportation Act in 1966 without a Secretary of Transportation or a Department of Transportation. Americans in the cities and states managed to transport themselves places even in the absence of a federal department devoted to the task. What's the scope? Well, the New York City subway had already been built. The San Francisco cable cars were running. The Brooklyn Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Transcontinental Railroad, the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, the Sumner and the Callahan Tunnels beneath Boston Harbor, the George Washington Bridge, the St. Lawrence Seaway. All of these were completed without the existence of the Federal Department of Transportation. After the department was created, progress in major infrastructure projects actually stalled. People point to airline passenger safety as a success, but the Boeing 737 MAX fiasco and the September 11th, 2001 hijackings call even that into question. Any truly necessary functions of the Transportation Department could be returned with relatively minimal hassle to the Commerce Department, where those functions rested before 1966, or to the states, the counties, the cities, the towns, even unincorporated territories. He notes, in 2011, Republican presidential candidate Rick Perry proposed closing three cabinet departments. He ended up serving the Trump administration as Secretary of Energy, heading a department whose elimination he had supported, though one he failed during a televised debate to recall. Remember the oops moment? Recent presidents have added government units, Department of Homeland Security, Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, the Space Force. Rather than shutting them down, there were some exceptions. President Reagan proposed eliminating the Interstate Commerce Commission, which finally did sunset on January 1st, 1996. President Carter set in motion the end of the Civil Aeronautics Board, yet another federal agency that has proved to be by ceasing to exist, that it was definitely less than essential to begin with. If totally getting rid of a department seems too drastic, perhaps Mr. Biden and his allies in the Democrat-controlled Congress can start with a more incremental test. Let the rest of the Transportation Department's employees take 2 months of leave, like Secretary Buttigieg did. If no one misses them, then maybe they, too, are better off not planning a return to the office anytime soon. They could look for alternative employment in the private sector, which happens to be short of help. That's Ira Stoll. News Talk 1110 993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. TJ, you got some sound for me here? Okay, I want to play this. This has nothing to do with anything we're talking about other than it's just, I think it's darn entertaining, okay? Joe Biden, this is cut 25. The video goes like this. I think I posted it up over at the my Twitter page. They're having an event at the White House. Joe Biden is walking across the lawn. They're playing a patriotic song. And Joe Biden walks up and literally starts talking to nobody. And Jill Biden has to come up to him and say, stop. And he stops. It's a shocking piece of video. It's like, are you talking to your imaginary friend? Let's hear it. Go.
I tell you what, I would like to learn it. See that?
He walks up, he goes, I'll tell you what, I'd like to learn how to do it. And then Joe Biden walks up and says, they're playing the music right now. You're not talking to anybody. The mic is on. And he's all like, okay, yeah. Hey, but here, wreck that bad boy one more time, man. This is good.
I tell you what, I would like to learn it. See that?
Yeah. She has to come over and be like, no, stop. You're talking to nobody. There's nobody you're talking to. Just, shh, shh. You know, it was a hit song back in the, you know, if Boomer's listening, he knows what I'm talking about. There was a hit song in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, and it was a song called You're Nobody Called Today. A terrible song. Just a terrible, such an early 80s song. And he was talking to his nobody. He was talking to his, it might have been Crystal Gayle. I can't remember who it was, but it was, you're nobody called today. And that's Joe Biden. He's just standing there playing from the mountains to the prairie. I tell you what, I'd really like to learn it. What do you want to learn? I mean, you're the president. You could probably be taught anything. You'd be like, bring me that Russian speaker from the MIT. I want him to teach me Russian. Get me Julia Childs. Get me, I want Julia Childs to show me how to make a spatchcock chicken. Speaking of which, Jim in San Diego. Hello, Jim.
Yes, segue from the spatchcock chicken.
Not spatchcock, spatchcock chicken.
Chicken.
What you do is you serve it with shuttlecocks all around it there to celebrate.
Good thing he wasn't yammering about spatchcock chickens up at the microphone.
Well, hold on. I'm going to do it one more time. Go ahead, TJ. Let's hear him again. Cut 25. This is him saying, well, I'd like to learn how to do it. I'll tell you that right now.
I tell you what. I would like to learn it.
He'd like to learn it. I don't know. What does he want to learn?
What he's doing is his stream of consciousness. He's just saying what's in his brain. At the time, he's not actually talking to anybody, just the voice in his head thinking what he's thinking. So just, you know, give him a break. He's just, you know.
Well, hold on. Here's another one from Biden where he's just musing on things. Go.
And he looked at me and said, Joe, you should run. I said, but I feel strongly about all these issues, but I got involved in the civil rights movement and the war. He said, Joe, you should do it.
He was reminiscing when he was all part of the civil rights movement, too, that I don't remember him ever being a part of. Remember, that was disproven.
My favorite was when he got done with the speech and he looked off stage and goes, can I see my family now?
He never said that.
Yes, he
never said, can I see my family now?
Yes, he did. He looked off the stage and goes, can I see my family now? As soon as he finished his doing a speech, you didn't see that?
I didn't. Now I understand that you are calling to be recognized to respond and defend the honor of the Department of Transportation. Go.
Well, not necessarily just the function of it. There is a function. People say, "Oh, you wouldn't notice it if they left and like went on paternity leave for 6 months to see their adopted baby. You would notice, and you did notice. You know how?
How?
They have what is known as, in the FAA, just to lead up to it, NOTAM, Notice to Airmen. They're issued every week. They're about everything from the towers that aren't working to beacons that might well work at this airport, about winds that might be at this, high winds at this airport. And how does that relate to DOT? DOT handles what is known as Notice to Ship Handlers. They issue warnings and advisements about things going on around the world and maritime environment, lighthouse might be not working, buoy might not be there, channel might not be dredged, an oil pipeline might be...
I knew you were going there. I knew he was going there.
Container ships. And guess who's supposed to sign the notice to ship handlers? Every week, it's got to cross his desk.
Who?
So that you can post it on the wall in the operations center or your ship.
Who?
Or in the hangar of your airplane. Department of Transportation, head of Department of Transportation. No notice the ship handlers got signed for 6 months.
No kidding. Unbelievable.
Nobody thinks they're going to notice.
Yeah,
they're
going to notice now. Ain't that the truth? I mean, tell me, Crystal. Is that Crystal Gayle? That's not Crystal. Who is Sophia?
Sylvia.
It's Sylvia singing "You're Nobody Called Today." That's President Biden. Yeah, I'd like to learn it. You want to learn that? Okay. This is from his heyday. 70s. 704-570-1110. I'm Brett Witterbull. That's a great hour. News Talk 1110-993-WBT. News Talk 1110-993-WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. Let's bring it a little bit closer to home and the impact on your personal life. What do I mean by this? Well, as you know, we heard last week from Ron Klain, who I believe is the shadow president of the United States. He's basically running the show over there. Ron Klain came out and said this inflation thing that we have going on right now, well, that inflation is that's a sign of high-class problems, is that that's what you people are having. So you go out, I'm sure, like everybody else, and you do your food shopping on some regular basis, right? Maybe you go out and you shop monthly. Maybe you go out and you shop every week, 2 weeks, whatever it is. And I am certain that you have seen shortages in stores. I have seen shortages in stores. And I'm just wondering, you know, if you've come across that sort of stuff, you know, how it is that you're processing this. Let me give you an example. Procter & Gamble, right? One of the biggest conglomerates in the world, Procter & Gamble, P&G, they have come out and they have said they expect solid sales and profit growth over the next 9 months, even as costs for everything from warehouse space to raw materials rise faster than the consumer products company expected. From furniture makers to grocers, the world's biggest companies are using their deep pockets, sprawling global operations, and commanding market share to insulate themselves from the global supply chain meltdown. P&G makes Tide detergent and Crest toothpaste. They said today, that they're going to start charging more for razors and certain beauty and oral care products. Price increases that come in addition to earlier moves to start charging more for staples like diapers and toilet paper. If you have one, you may not have to do the other. Anyways, the company said its sales and profit goals for the year remain intact. They've managed to keep products in stock. To the consumer, it looks like we're in good supply, P&G Chief Financial Officer Andre Schulten said in an interview. Other corporate giants are remaining relatively insulated from the global supply chain crisis, with profits and sales moving upward. They're stable, sometimes even growing. U.S. inflation is at its highest level in a decade as price increases from pandemic-related labor and materials shortages ripple through the economy. In the case of IKEA, a lot of people get their furniture at IKEA, the world's largest furniture seller, and you can also get Swedish meatballs, said, though many of its products are absent from shelves as they sit idle at warehouses waiting for trucks, shortages weren't significantly affecting sales because the company has a big enough range of products to provide alternatives. Meantime, the company said, consumers' shift to online shopping has also provided a sales boost that more than makes up for lost revenues. Albertsons, big grocery, huge grocery chain, said this week that their sales rose nearly 5% for the three-month period ending September 11th, despite major gaps in supply. The company, the second largest U.S. grocer, said it's offering alternatives to out-of-stock items and passing on price increases to consumers who so far have been willing to pay for more staples. The CEO of Albertsons said Monday during a call with analysts that supply chain challenges persist and that shoppers might not find exactly what they're looking for in stores, but the grocer is finding ways to supply its shelves and consumer demand remains strong. So you look at all of these pictures from across the spectrum, and what are you seeing? You're seeing increased prices for products. You're seeing higher prices being charged. And what you are essentially seeing is a tax on your grocery shopping. When you pump that much money into the economy, like we have with the COVID dollars, eventually you start to see the impact out there. Now, costs are rising higher and faster than many of these folks anticipated. Demand remains high, though, for pandemic hot sellers such as cleaners, paper towels, and toilet paper. They're starting to see people beginning to shop, and the H word is starting to be heard. Hoarding. Hoarding is starting to happen in some places. Yahoo Finance, people are hoarding. Food shortages are the next supply chain crunch. This is from Brendan Case and Leslie Patton and Kim Chipman writing over at the Yahoo Finance page this morning. There's plenty of food. There just isn't always enough processing and transportation capacity to meet rising demand as the economy is revving up. More than a year and a half after the coronavirus pandemic upended daily life, the supply of basic goods at U.S. grocery stores and restaurants is once again falling victim to intermittent shortages and delays. I never imagined that we'd be here October 2021 talking about supply chain problems, but the chief executive officer of Albertsons Companies is echoing the laments of other retailers. In Denver, broken parts at the milk supplier's plant is affecting shipments of half-pint cartons, on top of disruptions at one time or another in cereal, tortillas, and juice. They're struggling with supply chain issues with different items since school went back into session. That's the executive director of food services at the Denver Public Schools. In Chicago, Dill Pickle Food Co-op ran out of certain dry goods because its main distributors haven't been sending full orders in recent weeks. In fact, one of the pieces that's being reported is when you go to the supermarket and you look at the shelves, you'll look at the shelves and you're like going, oh, wow, the shelves are full. But if you take a box of rice off the shelf, you'll look and you'll see there's nothing behind it. They're forward loading these shelves so that people don't panic. But the CEO of Saffron Road, which is a producer of frozen and shelf-stable meals, is holding extra inventory. They've got about 4 months of supply on hand instead of the typical 1 or 2 months. But their CEO says people are hoarding, and you're going to see it in the next few months. A&W Restaurants earlier this year had to cancel a marketing deal for chicken tenders when its supplier couldn't get extra stock of poultry. Instead, the chain, which now has 560 locations, went with chili cheese fries. I want the chicken tenders. I don't want the chili cheese. Get the chili cheese fries. I mean, that's, what are you doing to me? Land O'Lakes, one of the biggest U.S. farm cooperatives, says its members are producing abundant amounts of milk. That's good to know. So Land O'Lakes says that their people are producing enough milk. And that's important because we don't want to run out of milk. News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterble Show. This is such a great song. I mean, it's just off the charts good. It is 4:22 in the afternoon, 704-570-1110. So guess what happened? It looks like there may be movement on this IRS bank reporting plan. Apparently, the American people don't want the Treasury Department and the Biden administration to go climbing through their bank accounts to see how much money they've got in those accounts. Democrats are now trying to scale back the Treasury's IRS bank reporting plan amid Republican uproar. Senate Democrats on Tuesday will now unveil a scaled back version of the Biden administration proposal to crack down on wealthy tax cheats after, quote, conservative groups and the bank industry raised major privacy concerns, three people with knowledge of the coming announcement said. So it hasn't come out yet, but it's supposed to come today. Anytime before 10 p.m., kind of like when the package shows up. Initially, the Department of the Treasury and the Senate Democrats had proposed requiring financial institutions to provide the Internal Revenue Service with additional information on bank accounts with more than $600 in annual deposits or withdrawals. So over the course of a year, if you put more than $600 or more in or out of the account, they wanted to see your bank records. This afternoon, I was watching a little bit of Jen Psaki's press conference with the Washington news media there, with the White House press corps. And Peter Ducey, he went at this a little bit with her, and he said, wait, if you're going for high net worth individuals, people that are tax cheats, that are billionaires, why are you roping in anybody more than $600 in annual deposits or withdrawals? And she said, well, it's because we have to find out what's going on because, you know, everybody, regular people get W-2s and these people don't, and they've got to pay their fair share. Does she think like these people are opening 50,000 bank accounts at $600 each and going, oh, okay, we've shielded it? After a backlash, the new proposal will instead require the provision of additional information for accounts with more than $10,000 in annual deposits or withdrawals. That's stupid. I'm sorry, that's a stupid idea. I mean, the same problem here. So more than $10,000 in annual deposits or withdrawals. So let's say we take $10,000 and divide it by 12. That's $833 a month. Again, that's like $600. That's like $600. That's very close to $600. With more than $10,000 in annual deposits or withdrawals, a measure that Democrats have been considering for weeks, the revised version of the bank reporting proposal will also weaken its scope by exempting all wage income from counting towards the $10,000 threshold, intending to ensure that it applies only to large account holders. Be honest with me for a second. Did you in your life ever think you'd have to go to someone like Janet Yellen or Joe Biden or Jen Psaki or Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren and ask permission to put money into or take money out of your bank account? For real. I mean, what do we call these people? I think we call them snoops, right? They're snooping. They're nosy. What is it? What is it about the Democrats, especially the hard left ones? They're just, they're nosy. They want to mind everybody's business. What kind of car are you driving? What kind of truck are you driving? What kind of gasoline are you buying? What are you eating? How much are you eating? Why are you eating? All of that sort of stuff. That's all they care about. They're just nosy. They just want to snoop. I mean, really, at this point, you just got to kind of say, get a life. I mean, you're going to hire 85,000 agents in the IRS. You're going to beef up the IRS. You've gone around the world and you've cut all these deals in an extra constitutional way. You've cut all these agreements, back of the envelope pieces of paper with other countries saying we're going to all agree to keep the corporate tax rate at this number just so that we can make sure that nobody gets to get an advantage on any other country. This is crazy. Treasury has said the tax gap. Let me do this. The difficulty in raising taxes has fueled lawmakers' interest in closing, quote, the tax gap, or the difference between what taxpayers owe the IRS and what actually gets collected in new revenue. Treasury has said the tax gap amounts to $7 trillion over 10 years, so $700 billion a year, basically. Estimates by Treasury officials have found that roughly $160 billion goes unpaid in taxes by the richest 1% every year. So who's the other people then that are not paying if it's $700 billion and you've only got $160 billion accountable there? Some nonpartisan tax experts have questioned whether the Biden plan would effectively raise as much revenue as Yellen has claimed. Most rich Americans are able to lower their payments to the IRS by hiring advisors who aggressively exploit loopholes in the existing tax laws, said Steve Rosenthal. And you know what? Many of those rich Americans who seek to exploit the tax laws are the very people who voted for Biden and Harris. They are rich Democrats. This is not mom and dad with a farm. This is not your aunt and uncle running a hardware store or a supermarket. These are well-connected practitioners of politics. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. I want to grab this call because this call is right on point with what we were talking about with this new tax approach. Tony is up next. Hello, Tony.
Yes. I have 2 points. I started with one, but another thought came to me. Number one, since I'm an 80-year-old widow on Social Security, the government already knows what's going into my account.
For sure.
Number two, don't the wealthy keep their money offshore?
I think there are offshore trusts and offshore banking and things like that.
Then they don't have to worry about what the government thinks, do they?
Well, you know what? But you're going to have assets here in the United States, right? And so...
A few, but the government won't know all the truth.
They won't. But
I hope.
But you raise an interesting point here, Tony. Okay, and this is important to understand. You also raise the point of what I was just alluding to, which is the agreements, these sort of flexible agreements that have been made between countries, and they're not treaties. They're not agreements like a treaty that we all sign, because that wouldn't get ratified, I'm sure, through a lot of the countries' parliaments and congresses. So they've just agreed to say, well, we don't go any lower than 15%. Can we all just agree 15% is where we're going to put the tax rate? Now, my guess is if you end up with Trump coming into the race, deciding he wants to run in 2024, the first thing he's going to say is we're going to grenade this whole structure that the Biden administration put into place. We're going to go, you know, we're not going to go 22% or 28%. We're going to go, forget 15%. We're going to go 10%. 10% on the corporate tax rate. We're going to bring every company into the United States of America. I think he would do something like that. Because he's going to, if he decides he wants to run again, he's going to want to like really go big, go bold. And I think that is one of the things he's going to try to do. But right now, these are just the foreign ministers and the, you know, the ministers of state around the world who have just gotten together and said, okay, this is the global agreement on corporate taxes, you know, and that's all been constructed by Janet Yellen. She's made all those phone calls. She's gone around the world. You know, she's had the discussions with people. And you know, the thing about it is that's, by my reading, that's collusion. I mean, that's they've colluded on the global tax rates, the corporate tax rates. The rate is set at 15%, will not be raised. Corporations are to pay tax wherever they operate, not just in the HQ country. Details on how taxes are to be spread across jurisdictions are to be determined. The deal is set to take effect in 2023. It's called the Global Agreement on Minimum Corporate Taxes. This isn't going to do jack for people to get money squeezed out of the system and into the pockets of the treasuries. I don't think it's going to work. I think it's going to have the practical effect of, you know, destroying more value. Here, let me give you another interesting example of this kind of part of the world, okay? There's this thing called ESG. So Edward Stephen George, right? ESG. Actually, it stands for environmental, social, and government. It's a type of investing. ESG investing is sort of the way to go with many of the virtue signalers. For example, who are those two? Who are the two freeloaders that live in California right now? Those two freeloaders from England. Oh, Meghan and Harry. They decided they're going to invest in ESG, investing in assets in an environmentally friendly, socially responsible way. Well, it turns out it's a highly questionable and sometimes outright deceptive enterprise. As experts and operatives in the finance world have pointed out, the ESG label is unregulated and opaque. It means you can't really see what's behind them. Funds can charge clients higher fees for assets that are, in fact, not doing the ethical thing that they're supposed to be doing. For example, fossil fuel-free funds can actually fund fossil fuels, in part because most people don't actually know what investments they're holding in their basket of funds. And because ESG portfolios are guided by such broad and inconsistent sets of criteria, ranging from employee development to health and safety to supply chains, even ExxonMobil, a major oil company, can be rated as a green investment by premier ESG raters. It's really incredible when you look at the way these folks operate, because what they want to do is they want to push ideology, but they don't want to feel badly about missing out on good investments, right? Here's a great example. You guys remember a particularly creepy guy who ran for president as a Democrat in 2020 from San Francisco. Do you know who I'm talking about? Do you guys remember who I'm talking about here? Tom Steyer. Tom Steyer used to do these commercials designed exclusively to frighten children. He was the most frightening man that would come on TV, because he would come on TV and he'd go, Donald Trump is the most dangerous human being to ever walk the face of the earth. He's going to get us in a nuclear war and your children are going to die. Children, your puppies are also going to die. Nobody's going to be alive because of Donald Trump. I'm Tom Steyer. I want you to impeach him now. He was Mr. Impeacher. And then he became Donald Trump wants to take us to war with North Korea. And then he became Mr. I'm going to run for office. Well, Tom Steyer made all of his fortune investing in the filthiest, dirtiest, most pollutingest energy sectors around the world. He would go and invest in places like Yemen with like no regulation at all, no environmental regulation in sub-Saharan Africa. He'd go to all these places and he would go exploit and dig up the oil and the resources. And then do you know what he did? He made billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. And he said, you know what? I have had a change of heart.
I have decided that I can no longer exploit and rape Gaia, Mother Earth. So I'm going to work to put the energy businesses out of business. But he made his own money. That's what this ESG stuff is like. It's a scam. You ought to just participate in the market directly. I'm going to give you a great example of this coming up. You're going to love this, and it's going to be something you can use to kind of jack up your kooky leftist friends.
News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterville Show. Okay, I just told you about Tom Steyer, told you about all this virtue signaling stuff that goes on with, you know, big-time, heavy-duty leftists who want to look like they care about everything. Alex Tabarrok has this incredible piece that I think is so brilliant. It's at a place called marginalrevolution.com, marginalrevolution.com. The headline is all you need. Be green, buy a coal mine. It's time to re-up the idea of buying coal mines and shuttering them. I wrote this, wrote about this a few years ago based on a piece that I came across, and it came up on Twitter, so I went looking for a coal mine to buy. There's a coal mine for sale in West Virginia for only $7.8 million. According to the ad, the mine produces 10,000 tons of coal monthly and has reserves of 8 million tons. So here are a few of the back-of-the-envelope calculations. Each ton of coal burned produces 2.5 tons of carbon dioxide. It costs about $100 to sequester a ton of carbon dioxide for a long time. Thus, 10,000 tons of coal burnt monthly produces 25,000 tons of carbon dioxide, and it would cost $2.5 million a month to sequester the CO2. Or buying the mine pays for itself in reduced CO2 emissions in 3 months. Ordinarily, buying up the supply would increase supply elsewhere, but coal mines are going out of business. Thus, no one is investing much in building new coal mines. The supply curve, therefore, is inelastic. In addition, you could buy right up to mine in precisely those countries that are not committed to reducing coal mining. Indeed, you could buy the right to mine costly to exploit coal deposits. Those deposits are cheap since they're costly to develop. And by taking them off the market, you're making the supply curve even more inelastic, so you aren't encouraging much more supply. What he's basically saying is take your money. If you really believe that you want to fix the environment, don't go past these laws and the Green New Deal and all this stuff. Just go take your money and go buy coal mines and then say, we're not going to turn this into anything but what it is, just a mountain. I have respect for that. I literally respect that approach 100 million times more than AOC flapping her gums or Bernie Sanders flapping his gums or any of this other stuff. I ask this question and I ask it constantly. If we want to save the climate, like I don't think that we can control the climate, all right? We can't control weather, let alone the climate of the entire planet. But if that's what you want to do, if you want to control climate, why does that involve sending $70 trillion to Washington, D.C., so that bureaucrats can parse that money out? Like, why does it have to go to Pete Buttigieg? Why does it have to go to Bernie Sanders? Why does it have to go to Elizabeth Warren? Why does it have to go to the Squad? Why does it have to go to John Kerry? In fact, can I tell you a crazy idea? What if you were to write a piece of legislation that said, hey, if you're a billionaire and you invest in buying and idling natural gas, coal, oil, whatever you want to do, then we're going to give you a reduction on your taxes. We're going to give you a tax cut for spending your money to do that. In other words, we're just going to outsource the job. What can the federal government do? Nothing but take your money and destroy value. That's all the feds can do, is take your money and destroy value. Why don't you actually go get people who have a ton of money and make them go buy, you know, push them to go buy this stuff and then they idle it? The reason why you don't have to worry that this will ever happen is because people don't think like that. We're conditioned from a young age to believe that the government, the federal government, is all powerful and that they can fix the climate. I would get behind the idea of taking trillions of dollars and figuring out how to control weather. Right? So you could make it rain where there's drought. You can reduce the rain where there's too much water. You could do all that sort of stuff, right? You could absolutely experiment with that. Do what you want. And I know. We'll get the chemtrail callers and we'll get the people who are talking about you're putting aluminum sulfide in the air and everybody knows that's what's happening because the frogs are turning into... Well, you don't understand, Brett. You're part of the problem. I just heard you. Yes, Alex? I heard you talking, Brett. Brett Witterbull, WBT Charlotte. You're on after Kaliner. I tried to call him, but they hung up on me. I know what goes on with the frogs. The frogs are changing. Okay, Alex. Go ahead, Mr. Jones. Okay, you were advocating for shutting down coal mines. No, what I was advocating for, frankly, Mr. Jones, was use your own money if you really believe this kind of stuff, right? Like, I think rich people who are conservative should open schools. Because the left will never spend money on schools. They'll just tell you you have to pay more in taxes to open schools. But they're not actually going to go about doing the work of doing that kind of thing, right? You're confusing me. It's okay. You're fine. Don't worry about it. But you could do weather modification way cheaper than you can controlling the climate on the entire planet. Why do they want to continue to do that? Because it's about controlling. It's about controlling the climate and controlling you and making sure you live in a little teeny tiny 6-foot by 8-foot concrete hovel in a city, and you ride who makes those stupid rent scooters? Bird? You ride your Bird scooter with your knapsack to your collective, and you sit there, and you guys all work at a wooden table, probably from IKEA, and you eat your hummus and chips, and you're like zero footprint. You don't even wear shoes. You don't bathe but once a month because you're saving the environment, and you smell like weed, and it's just a disgusting display of the destruction of the potential of capitalism. And I'm telling you, just take all your money. Go get Elon Musk to take all that money that he makes selling liberals Teslas, because only liberals buy Teslas. Don't even try to convince me. It's only pinko commie liberals that buy Teslas, so they could take their children to high-end preschools, teaching them Germanic languages that'll never be useful, and make them march around in climate justice marches. But the fact of the matter is, go to him, he's got $200 billion, and say, Elon, buy the coal mines. And he'll laugh at you. But the market can always correct, and it can correct the problems and imbalances if you let it do its job. Well said, Brett. Nonsense. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Brett Witterbull Show. Good to be here. Can you believe I'm still getting dragged over at my Facebook page because yesterday I said something I should never have said as far as some people are concerned? What did I say at the Facebook page? Okay, I hope you're sitting down for this. Rest in peace, Colin Powell. Thank you for your service. I'm still getting blown up by listeners who are posting over at the page. Saying, ode to a traitor. How disappointing. I don't understand how rest in peace, Colin Powell, and thank you for your service is in any way, shape, or form offensive. Like, you've died. You've passed away. Rest in peace. And while you were here, serving in the military for 50 years, 30 years. Thank you for your service as a person who served our nation. He's dead. He has passed away. He has no idea. I'm going to tell a story again that I thought was one of the most brilliant takes that I ever saw Rush Limbaugh offer up, and he offered up a ton of them. Got a phone call from a woman. Her name was Karen. I know it's kind of funny now, but back in 2003, it was a different situation. Her name was Karen, and she called Rush, and she said to Rush, I hate that
Donald Rumsfeld so much. It just, I get crazy when I see him. I just, my head, I'm getting, she started like screaming. And Rush is like, madam, 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 hold on, hold on. What is the problem? She says, I just hate Donald Rumsfeld. He's a warmonger, and he's a terrible human being. And I hate him, and he's with Bush and Cheney, and he's evil, and he's terrible. And Rush stopped her and said, you know, he has no idea who you are. Like he doesn't know who you are. He doesn't know that you hate him. He's completely unaware. He's probably not listening to the show right now because he's running the war. You know, this is, you're burning a lot of energy hating somebody who has no idea who you are. And that's what I would kind of say about this, right? I mean, it's like you, rest in peace, thank you for your service. Just feels like a polite thing to say. He has no idea that you're raging against him. And he probably wouldn't care. He's probably like, yeah, okay. Thanks much. 704-570-1110. Something new is happening, but it's really not that new. And that sounds like a paradox. What if I told you that there is an explosion of violence taking place around our schools? Now, you've heard Brett Jensen cover a number of stories with guns being recovered at CMS schools. I think we're up to 10, and then three knives and all that sort of stuff that is going on out there. This piece from about a week ago, as student violence surges, educators say mental health issues are absolutely through the roof and are draining teachers. Now, I have heard this anecdotally from a number of teachers for a while. I have heard that the reason why so many teachers embraced the shutdown the way they did with the virtual learning was you were getting to a place where teachers could not be assaulted and staff could not be assaulted by students in classrooms and schools. At a Florida middle school, 87 students have gotten in physical fights since school began last month. At an Illinois high school, 70 students have been suspended for violent altercations. At a New York high school, two students were cut during an altercation, causing parents to demand more safety agents. At a Kentucky lower school, a counselor said she has assessed 26 students aged 8 through 10 for suicide risks since May. And it's only October. We just confiscated a gun from a 10-year-old, said Anna Fusco, president of the Broward Teachers Union in Florida. First graders slapped a teacher in the face. Second graders slapped a teacher in the face. Middle schoolers corralled around a teacher and shoved her. Every single day I get a story from an educator. On Friday, the nation's largest teachers union said social media has helped create a culture of fear and violence, right? You got the stupid TikTok challenges and all of that, the devious lick. School staff members across the country told The Insider that they are seeing surges in student outbursts from vandalism, verbal altercations, to gun violence and slashing. Fusco said teachers have been trained on how to handle a shooter when he comes in, but not on preventing violence long term. All our districts care about is getting the curriculum, pounding the academics. There's nowhere near the level of training that can really make a vast difference with a student, especially one that's getting violent. Now, school counselors are sounding the alarm on what they believe to be a main driver behind the violence: student mental health. The number of suicide threats at my own school has skyrocketed since COVID, said Amy Riley, a school counselor at Mercer County Intermediate School in Kentucky. Just this morning, I had to do a suicide risk assessment on a 9-year-old in my school before I came to the hearing today. Riley told The Insider she's assessed 26 students, as I mentioned, ages 8 through 10, for suicide risk since May, many of whom were then hospitalized or enrolled in therapy. Before the pandemic, she said she would have one or two suicide assessments a month. Now she sees two or three students every day. Even still, Riley says she feels lucky since many rural schools in Kentucky have just one counselor. Some have none at all. She has a total of three. At least they were in school and we were able to talk to them and get them the help they needed in the past, she said. What we're finding is that a lot of the symptoms of PTSD are being mirrored in our students who are going through this pandemic. Tariel Key, an assistant principal at Collinsville High School in Illinois, said that there has been a significant increase in both student violence and student mental health issues across the state. Key said they've doubled the number of school counselors since he started, despite the additional hires
said teachers are constantly struggling with students' emotional challenges, contributing to burnout and low morale. Some of our staff are almost in a state of crisis themselves. To prevent students from resorting to violence as a result of poor mental health, Fusco says, schools need more trained staff. We need more bodies, people that are properly trained to take on the extra toll of the students with social, emotional situations. But if you don't have the funding for it, then you can't do it, she added. That's one of the biggest problems. This pandemic has taken a major impact on our youngest people. And sadly, I feel that the mania that we've seen generated in the press, in the media for the last, 3 years? It's only going to get worse. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. It's that time when we cross the streams. AM, PM, Winterbull, Thompson. Bo Thompson joins us on the line now. Hello, Bo Thompson.
Happy Tuesday.
A happy Tuesday to you, my friend. And it is interesting to see sort of the panoply of news that is happening out there. I wanted to pick this up because we didn't hit this morning, but I'm curious to see your thought on this. We saw the reporting that came out of the New York Post overnight of these flights that are going to different parts of the country. This particular set of flights was going to New York, and they're moving unaccompanied minors and young people on these planes, kind of taking them to different locations where they're either meeting up with family or meeting up with sponsors, right? If they have no legal family at that point. And the question becomes this: if it's all above board, why are they doing it at like 4:30, 3:30 in the morning? This feels a little sketchy to me, Bo. What do you say?
Yeah, and I saw the presser where Jen Psaki said we're talking about early flights, earlier than you might like to take a flight, kind of chuckling in the process. Which, yeah, I mean, it's as if there's something going on that they don't want to tell you about when they're talking about, you know, taking flights, red eye flights and such when no one else is looking, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because when you look at this, I think the administration got very, very rattled with the migrants, the Haitian immigrants or migrants who were under that bridge, and the news kept covering it and covering it and covering it. And I think they said, you know what, we have got to take control of this situation and not have there be a central location that the press can go and cover and make a challenge for us. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, I wasn't necessarily initially, you know, thinking about what was going on at the Texas border there, but yeah, you're right. I mean, that was front and center, and it was there for all to see at all hours of the day. So, the idea that maybe they might want to attend to things, and I'm not suggesting. I'm not suggesting anything good or bad. I'm suggesting the optics, kind of like what you're saying, is paying attention to optics and paying attention to how things are perceived is something that I think, that whole situation caught them off guard and has made them rethink a lot of aspects of this.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. One other thing we didn't ever get a chance to hit either, and then I'm going to bring us up to the current moment. DC Comics removing the American Way from Superman's slogan. This is, they're going to do a better tomorrow instead of the American Way. I don't like this.
Well, I mean, correct me. I don't know. I guess when you're watching Superman in 2022, yes. He's supposed to be a global hero, but I always thought he was ours. Meaning, I always thought he was America's. Not that he has anything against any other country, but he's America's superhero. Mm-hmm. And 1978? I was looking at the history of where that phrase was said, and you know, apparently it was early in the comics, and then it went away for a while, and then in 1978 with the what I think is the definitive Christopher Reeve Superman.
Indeed.
You know, he said it in the movie, and it sort of set it in stone. And now, you know, they're pulling back from that. I don't know. I mean, you know, some people will say, oh, you're talking about stuff in a comic book. But by the same token, it's an American symbol. I mean, can't we have our
right.
Superman?
Right. It's a lot like saying Captain America, right? Well, he's not going to be Captain America. He's not going to represent America anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that, you know, somebody will say, well, you know, you're not a Marvel guy, you're a DC guy. Well, you know, to me, Superman is the... I got nothing against Marvel and all the Avengers and all that stuff. It's great, but to me, it all starts and stops with Superman. That's how I was brought up.
I don't even know who's in Marvel and who's in DC.
Like, when you said Captain America, then I was like, well, I guess
is he Marvel
Captain
or DC?
America might give Superman a run for his money as far as America's superhero, but I still side with the guy with the cape.
So is Captain America's Marvel?
Yeah, Captain America's
Marvel. Okay, I got it. So in other words, Marvel is American League. Superman would DC would be National League.
I think that's a fair. I don't know what TJ may be. TJ nodding or shaking his head.
He seems to be on board with this.
Okay, all right. Well, if TJ's on board, then we're in the wheelhouse.
Okay. So which brings me to the present challenge. Okay, I predicted that the Braves would face the Red Sox in the World Series, and I feel like I'm upholding my end of the bargain.
You are
right now because the Red Sox are just destroying the Astros.
Yeah,
Greinke's going to pitch tonight, so he's going to pitch for as long as he can. I guess he's been on the injured list a couple of different times, but now TJ has raised a topic of concern. Bo Thompson, he's worried that your Game 6 tickets may be making it harder on the Braves.
Because the Braves will, because I'm jinxing the Braves somehow.
That's exactly right.
You being a Braves fan as you are, if you had an opportunity to go to Game 6, wouldn't you want to go to Game 6?
I actually did. I love bragging about this, but I was there when they won the World Series, and it was Game 6. So,
okay. Well, mm-hmm. So I'm watching the game this past weekend, and my buddy and I were talking, and we're thinking, you know, I'd love to. A bucket list thing for me is to see. I haven't seen a Braves game before that counts for something other than the regular season.
Oh, wow.
Like, I've never been there when something was, you know, like in postseason.
Oh, yeah.
So this is my shot because, quite honestly, I figure if, TJ has been to a World Series game, so there you go. But I'm thinking if this is my shot, because if they make it to the World Series, those tickets are going to be impossible to be had, and they're going to probably be twice as much as a league championship. So, to me, this is... You know, this is my shot, TJ.
Well, Game 6 is better than Game 7. You are giving them some hope, so.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I could either be seeing the second to the last or the last game, but I'm hoping. I just want to see a game that matters in that stadium. And right now, it sounds so weird to say, but if the Dodgers can take care of business, I'll be there.
Oh, no. I thought we were friends.
We're just not friends for the next several days. And then, you know, when the Dodgers take care of business, then I'll hate the Dodgers again.
All right.
I got to say something. I as much as I'd love to go to a Game 7, I don't think I could handle that emotional
load. Oh, the stress.
I think I would just be miserable. I think I'd break out in hives.
Especially, well, yeah, that's when it becomes the NCAA tournament. That's when it becomes, you know, one and done. I won't know that I'm seeing that, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I won't know. I'll know that it's possible that it could be over that night, but if I get there at all. But if I get there, then I'll know that it's possible it could end that night, but then
that's
the
awesome.
Insurance game.
All right. Back to the present matter. Who do we have coming up on the fancy schmancy Wednesday edition of the Bo Thompson Show?
We have Beth Troutman in the house tomorrow. She usually is on Tuesdays, but we had to move some things around. Had Teresa Payton this morning talking all things digital. But Beth will be in the house tomorrow on Wednesday, on Hump Day, and looking forward to that as always.
Are you guys going to eat the peanuts and the shells?
See, I haven't talked to her, but knowing her like I do, I have a feeling that she's going to bring a bag of peanuts with her. And who knows what will ensue beyond that.
All right. We'll be watching closely.
Maybe it will inspire me, should there be, hypothetically, a Game 6, maybe I'll be eating shelled peanuts watching the Braves on Saturday night.
Oh, very good call. Excellent call.
Or maybe I won't.
Or maybe you won't. That's a good point.
Yeah.
The Bo Thompson Morning Show begins tomorrow at 5 a.m. Have a great night, my friend. I'll talk to you soon. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Good to be here with you. Okay. So I want to share this with you. This is interesting. Our good buddy, our man about town, Breaking Brett Jensen, sent this to me. This is reporting coming out of WCNC Charlotte, because we were talking about the schools, the violence, the explosions of violence around these schools around these country around the country. He adds this to the context of the conversation. CMS is facing a wave of teacher resignations and retirements. This is moving just now. More than 500 Charlotte Mecklenburg school teachers have left since August. 93 are pending retirements or resignations through the end of 2021. A teacher shortage affecting districts nationwide has impacted the CMS district as well. According to data shared with WCNC, since August 1st, 524 teachers have left the CMS school district. By December 31st, 93 more will leave. The district says it has 9,205 active teachers. Here's where it gets even crazier, though. In terms of trying to get these people replaced. So over the past 10 years, in particular, there's just been a chipping away of benefits and extra pay incentives, said CMS school board member Jennifer Delajara, sorry, I don't want to mispronounce it. And it has left many of our educators feeling undervalued, underappreciated. One teacher who left the CMS school district and teaching in general is Stephanie Misko. Misko left teaching for a job in the tech industry in June of 2021 after teaching English for 8 years. It felt like every year as a teacher, the job became harder and a little less of what I love about teaching. Felt a lot of guilt about leaving students that I care a lot about. Maybe in some ways, giving up on something I'm passionate about. But ultimately, Misko said the long hours, large classroom sizes, and heavy workload led to burnout. I feel so much anxiety at night. I feel so stressed and so exhausted when I would come home. She said the pandemic was the final straw. Teachers feel that their voices are not heard, that their voices don't matter. It's really demoralizing. Misko describes feeling less anxiety and more peace since leaving the profession, though she says she misses her students. It's going to take a complete revamping of the educational system to do right by teachers, folks are saying. When you look at the challenge that's before us, though, it's really quite stark. Earlier this month, CMS announced a new guest teacher program to help alleviate overworked teachers. The program will bring on new full-time guest teachers at 42 schools across the district in an effort to relieve teachers who are covering multiple classes each day. CMS announced it was raising the starting pay for bus drivers to over $17 an hour in an attempt to recruit new drivers and retain current employees. Data obtained by WCNC shows CMS has substantially fewer subs than in years past. During the 2017-2018 school year, CMS has 2,747 substitutes. That number has decreased each year since down to 1,123 last school year during the pandemic. But so far, only 365 people are working as subs this year in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools. North Carolina is among 15 states that don't require any specific education or licensure requirements for substitute teachers. So this is the challenge that's out there. This is the challenge that's out there. Let me grab this call real quick. Tara, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brett. My husband retired last week.
Wow.
As an administrator.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are out of control. The parents won't recognize that the kids are out of control.
Mm-hmm.
It's a no-win situation anyway. Mm-hmm. So if you get your kid, he's in a very high-end area.
Yep.
And the kids come with their vaping and their phones, and they tell him to, you know what, off.
Yep.
And he got a great job somewhere else, working less hours and getting paid more. It's going to happen.
How long was your
parents have got to get control of this?
How long was your husband?
47 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we're old.
That's incredible.
47 years, and he cried. It was not. Not an easy decision.
I mean, look, the fact of the matter is, you know, you're talking about he's taught multiple generations of students. And he's been around multiple generations of students.
Well, half the people that he has teachers, he taught them.
Yeah.
But parents better grab control of their kids real quick. Kids are running the Salem. They are running it, and it is pathetic. And there's no kind of any kind of I don't know. We raised four boys and one girl, and they had consequences. And these kids don't seem to have any.
So
they got those 16 months off, 18 months off. Mm-hmm. And they came back with a vengeance. Like, don't tell me what to do.
Yes. I've heard that on a number of fronts from a number. I've also heard that there's a certain amount of stunted development that has set in where a kid may be in fourth grade now, but really they've got the mentality of a late first grader or a second grader, and they haven't processed moving forward enough. Somebody was telling me in the last couple of days they felt like they should have almost frozen everything and held everybody back 1 year.
Well, that's what my son did with our grandchild. He mm-hmm. held them back a year because he hasn't learned anything. But the other thing, when they're high schoolers that think they know better than everybody, they tell my husband, oh, I don't need a job. I don't need college. I'm good. Okay, what are you going to do? He tries to help them. No. And parents, I'm sorry. I'm putting it a lot of it on parents.
Well, a lot of it is on parents.
Teachers get so much crap put on them.
Right.
And you can only do so much as a teacher, but then they have go, you know, my husband's best saying is you can tame a bear, but then you put it back into the forest. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
It's
very sad because I understand how committed people are that have dedicated their lives to this.
Yep.
And when you've got no consequence on the other side of it, what would happen just quickly? What would happen if a parent was called to come get the kid or to deal something with the kid? Would the parents just blow it off?
Well, what happens often is the parent says, no, I'm not coming in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they go to in-school suspension and then the parent won't come. And there's all multiple sides to the story.
Yeah. It's sad.
It gets blamed so much on the school and the teachers and the principals and the assistant principals. And, you know, let's start. Well, I won't go on my rant.
No, I understand. I get what you're saying.
I
get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Tara, tell your husband I appreciate his service for what he did all those years. And I appreciate you calling in today. Take care. That's Tara. It's very sad. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time of the night when the man with the mic comes into the studio.
Yes, we have a mic here.
To show us and to tell us what he'll be featuring on the smorgasbord that is Charlotte at 6. Mark Garrison, how are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm well. It's good to have you back.
Well, the smorgasbord has water, water, water on it starting at 6:05. Much of Charlotte under a boil order. Until tomorrow afternoon, big water main break.
Mm-hmm.
Have the latest on that. So it means you got to boil to brush or let your kids try to fumble around and brush with bottled water. That's fun to watch.
That's a challenge right there. Let me just say something. If the Biden administration were smart, Mark Garrison, they'd have Kamala and the president come down here and stand in front of that blast of water saying, this is why we need the infrastructure. But instead, we're doing human.
Yes, it was a 66-year-old pipe that broke.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. We've got some, as we'll tell you at 6, that were put underground in the 20s.
Oh!
And they're still in service.
It's probably a cast iron, that stuff that's like 4,000 pounds.
That stuff will last forever.
Oh,
yeah.
Forget it. Absolutely. the Roman baths.
620, gas prices continue shooting up. Did you know a fill-up costs $17 more on average today than this time last year?
Wow!
That's a lot.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And we'll also tell you how much more you're going to have to pay for natural gas this winter. That's not a pretty number either. Cops in Chicago saying no to the COVID shot. The city could lose 4,000 officers.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Our shortage will be over awfully soon here in terms of the police officers.
Yeah. 6:35, Dirty Restaurant Tuesday. Fancy restaurant in South Park will have you saying...
That was nasty.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of violations.
Oh, no.
At a high-dollar joint with... with a low score.
Oh, boy. All right. This I got to listen to because I've been making a list of different restaurants I want to try, and I want to make sure that's off the list.
It's probably a good idea.
All right, Mark Garrison.
All right, my friend.
Looking forward to it. That's Charlotte at 6 coming up just after 6 with Mark Garrison. Hello, Marie. Welcome to the program. Hello, Marie. Hello, hello, hello. This is weird. They're underwater. Well, I don't know. That was kind of like we got some lines crossed there or something. Somebody sent me this message in Twitter, in the Twitter. Here's what they said. In regards to the school situation, we were talking about with Tara and we were talking about with CMS and all these challenges. They said to me, I hope parents enjoy homeschooling because they are driving teachers out of the profession. Then the person goes on to say, they are going to end up with only CRT teachers because most of them could care less about behavior or grades. Now, that is an interesting angle I hadn't thought about. If you think about this for a minute, who is it that's coming out that's teaching CRT? It's newly minted teachers, right? It's students. It's people that have just come out of the out of the school systems, and they are coming out to tell you that they want to change the world, right? That's the whole thing. They want to make a difference. They want to change the world. And so the way they want to make a difference and the way they want to change the world is to come out and to say, all right, I'm going to go into the schools. It's going to be really hard, long hours, but I'm going to do this all for social justice, and I'm going to be a warrior for the CRT narrative and all that sort of stuff. Because if you really think about it, like with the pecking order, you have underperforming schools. In every city's got underperforming schools, right? Pretty much every community's got a school that is, you know, underperforming or not as proficient as the other schools. So, you know, you go to a town and you're like, okay, what's the best school? Okay, that's the best school. That's the okay school. That's a school that's not so good. And you make that calculus, right? You think about where it is you want to send your kids to school. Well, it's interesting to me that the underperforming schools in this community here in Charlotte and Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, it's interesting to me that you're not sending these young go-getters to the higher-end schools and the experienced teachers to the schools that are struggling. Because wouldn't you want to have schools that are struggling be brought up to speed by proficient teachers who have taught for a lot of years with a lot of experience? The kids that are performing well already, you can put in the wet behind the ears college grad and have them go in and work with those kids. But that's not the case. What's going to happen is the tenured teachers, quote unquote, are going to stay in the cushy jobs at the good schools. What's going to happen at the underperforming schools? You're going to end up with the CRT teachers, the social justice teachers, all that sort of stuff, going to those underperforming schools. And the problem with that is readily apparent. You're not teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic and science. You're teaching ideology. You're teaching a radical sort of ideological approach. And that is not the skill set that an underperforming school needs. You don't need to go in and be part of activism. You need to get in there and be part of science and math and reading and writing and all that sort of stuff. That's what you ought to be focusing on. That's what the parents want. Parents want to know that their kids are able to read and write and do all the things that they need to be able to do to function in a complicated world. We'll talk about more of this tomorrow. Thanks to TJ and Josh and Boomer and Anna and Mark Garrison and Bo Thompson. I am Brett Winterbull. We'll do it tomorrow starting at 3. News Talk 1110, 993 WBT.